You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. In what he termed his final call, the minister Louis Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam, addressed an international audience by closed-circuit television yesterday from Chicago, Illinois, in celebration of the annual Muslim observance of Savior's Day. His speech was titled, America at the Crossroads, War is Not the Answer. And Farrakhan hinted that he expected reprisals from the U.S. government under the guise of Homeland Security. Farrakhan commended religious leaders across the country for speaking out against the invasion of Iraq. He asserted that ministers had expressed their opposition to faith-based initiatives as a tool to suppress or control their ability to speak freely. Farrakhan then warned the nations of the world not to be persuaded to support the U.S. attack on Iraq by promises of financial support from the U.S.
This is indeed a very, very dangerous time. And we have entered into a period of darkness that President Bush's leadership is going to lead America to her fall. I want you to hear me very clearly now. This is not an emotional subject, and I really don't care what happens to me after I deliver this, but you will never be able to say that Farrakhan hedged on the truth. I'm going to tell you exactly what I was told that we are facing, that all the prophets have already foretold. And there's no way to clock President Bush and the actions of the U.S. government unless you can compare what he is saying and what he's doing to what is prophesied in both the Bible and Holy Quran. These books, Bible and Quran, are not books to be played with. And there contains warnings for the rulers of the world, warning for the government of the United States of America. You cannot read the Bible or read the Quran and ask yourself, is the greatest nation that ever was in the history of the world, where is it in the Bible? Where is it in the Quran? And if you don't know where to place America in the Bible and in the Quran, then you do not know how to guide the people in such an hour. So I want to thank everyone who prayed for me. And there were tens of thousands that prayed that I'm not yet over the hump. But I thank you for all your prayers for my speedy recovery. But above all, I thank Almighty God Allah, because if he were not with me, I couldn't stand in front of you today looking as I look and feeling as I feel. The United States of America is at the crossroads, and we too are at the crossroads. The Muslim world is at the crossroads. What is a crossroad? It is a crucial point, especially where a decision must be made. America is in the valley of decision, and you are also in that same valley. You cannot follow your leaders blindly, regardless to their being in positions of power that you have elected them or that they, in revolution, came to power. But power today is in the hands of God. And if you allow yourself with patriotic zeal to follow that which is in error, then as the Bible says, if the blind lead the blind, both then fall in the ditch, and the ditch represents hell. And I hasten to tell you, President of the United States is spiritually blind. Spiritually blind. The arrogance of power and wealth and the lofty position that God has allowed America to attain, the power that God has allowed America to amass, the influence that God has allowed America to wield, all of these are like heady wine that if you drink, you could become drunk and not be able to assess properly your thinking, your actions, your policies, your programs. And the masses of the people will see you drunk, but you can't see yourself. The masses of the people are trying to say something to the president. But the president is even more emboldened, even after millions and millions of people have protested against the war. He said that this will not sway him. This man came into office with a determined idea to remove Saddam Hussein from power. And the sad thing about this, that he does not see, the moment the bombs start falling, I am telling you that though Iraq looks easy to America, Iraq is a trigger, but the real thing will happen after Iraq. America will start rolling down the hill, I promise you, to total destruction. And the America that you think you know now, you will never know her again as a world power. Mark my humble words to you. The country has to make a decision, the importance of which may bring death or continued life. The decision that our government makes today is so weighty that if the decision to go to war is a decision in error, not only does death come to the persons who make the wrong decisions, but that person sentences their offspring to the consequences of their decisions. Each of us comes to a point in life where we are at the crossroads. But not only does President Bush have a decision to make, every one of us has a decision to make. We must make a decision today, not based on emotion, but we must pray that Allah will allow us to use the power of reasoning on what is being presented to us as a basis for decision making, and with clear and sober mind, make the right decision for America, a right decision for the world, a right decision for our children, and a right decision for the future. Based on an experience that I had, that I was shown the mind of Reagan, but that extended to Bush. Reagan was the first, Bush is the last. Listen, Reagan came into office with a determined idea to kill Muammar Gaddafi and destroy that regime. He failed, and every president since Reagan has had some altercation with the Muslim world. President Bush says he's not against Islam, but he's against the radicals in Islam. It is true that there are radicals that have hijacked Islam. But I want to say to Mr. Bush, you are a radical that has hijacked Christianity. There's no way that you can say you are justified in killing human beings because of your hatred of their policies. The United States of America. Listen, her prestige in the world under Bush is going down. The nation's afraid of her, but they don't like her. She's trying to buy China, buy North Korea, buy Saudi Arabia, buy Jordan, buy Turkey. She's gone to the little African nations in the UN, tempting them with little promises of wealth. I say to the governments of the world, you are fool If you believe that America will fulfill her promise to you, she promises you only to deceive. Now let me prove my point. After 9/11, she promised billions to New York. It's been a year and a half. Ain't no money come yet. Not to New York. She said, don't worry, Afghanistan.
Yes, sir.
We'll bomb the hell out of you. But we're going to rebuild you. But the money's not there. She's saying to the Iraqi exiles, after Saddam Hussein, don't worry, we'll rebuild Iraq. It'll be a democracy. We're going over there to liberate the Iraqi people. Well, who the hell is asking for you? Why don't you come in and liberate the homeless? Liberate the 42 million Americans that have no health insurance. Liberate the ignorant in America who want a college education but can't get it because they don't have money. Liberate the American people. Why are you going overseas spending billions and refuse to spend it at home on your own who needs? You are a liar and a deceiver. Ask the Native Americans how many promises have they fulfilled in the treaties that they made with you. What happened to our 40 acres and a mule? Don't worry, Turkey. We'll send you some money. We'll rebuild your airport facilities and just let us use your country. I warn you, Turkey, you'll be a Thanksgiving turkey for somebody. If you back America, Saudi Arabia, your doom is sealed. If you back America, Jordan, your doom is sealed. All those who join her in evil will taste of the consequences.
Minister Louis Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam, addressing an international audience yesterday by closed-circuit television from the Pavilion in Chicago, Illinois. Finally tonight, Peace Watch had the opportunity recently to chat with folk singer Pat Humphreys and her partner Sandy Opatow, who shared their thoughts on music's place and purpose in a time of war.
You know, I think it's the artist's job to articulate the issues and to present them in another form, you know, in that, you know, you can hear about issues that people talk about in one way. You know, they come in your body in one way, but when they come through by way of the visual arts or by way of music, I think they just enter a different door. And I think they're more accessible to different people, or inaccessible to people on a different level when they come in through those different avenues.
Sandy, could you conceive of not being able to have your political consciousness seep through your music?
Oh, I think it would not be as satisfying a world or a life, because what, sort of following up on what Pat was saying, when that kind of information comes through to you in the form of the arts, then it engages your whole body. Then you're not just a political person engaging through your mind level. You have your entire body and all the power of your body and your being to fight what needs to be fought.
Is this impending war with Iraq something that just sort of, I know as a writer, I feel sometimes that their thoughts and feelings and emotions are just pushing their way through to be on paper. Is that something that you experience as a writer, as a song writer?
It's something that I experience just as a human being. You know, I feel the weight of that, and I think a lot of people feel the weight of that. And given that we're artists, our way then of addressing that that pressure coming down on us is through our medium, you know, and our medium is music.
And the reason I say that is because some artists, singers, poets, etc., feel as though, well, I don't like to get political. Music is a universal language, and I don't want to sort of soil it or spoil it by getting political.
Not speaking out is as political an act as speaking out. And in fact, you know, what we've been suffering from so much is people's silence around these issues. And it's why things like September 11th happened, because we have not been addressing our relationship with other other nations, other religions, you know, other beings on the planet in a responsible way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took a shock like September 11th to shake us out of our sleep and out of our silence. And, you know, our experience is that, you know, thousands, millions of people are speaking up now.
Mm-hmm. Your song, Peace, Salam, Shalom, has been performed at many of the demonstrations that have been gaining momentum around the country lately. What inspired you to write this song, Pat?
You know, my own need for survival. You know, my own desire to carry on after September 11th. We were in the process of moving from the New York City area down to the Washington, D.C. area over that weekend. And we just happened to be down here, so we watched the whole thing on television, like everybody else, knowing that, you know, Sandy's family was up in New York. And we were terrified, and I wasn't sleeping those nights immediately following. And it really wasn't until those three words came to mind that I found my center again and my, you know, place of peace and the place that I could then move out from. Mm-hmm. And then Sandy and I fashioned it into a song and started singing it everywhere we could go.
Can we hear it now?
Sure.
So you have to picture this with thousands of people, because we've really sung it with thousands of people. And so I hope when you're hearing the song that you'll sing along with us wherever you are.
Peace, salam, shalom. 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 Peace, salam, shalom.
We believe in
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 peace, salam, shalom.
We will work for peace,
salam, shalom.
We will work for
peace, salam, shalom.
We will work for
peace, salam, shalom.
We will work for
peace, salam, shalom.
Jerusalem,
peace, salam, shalom.
Ramallah,
peace, salam, shalom.
In Tel Aviv,
peace, salam, shalom.
In Washington,
peace, salam, shalom.
In Hebron,
peace, salam, shalom.
In Beit El,
peace, salam, shalom.
In Bethlehem,
peace, salam, shalom.
In New York City,
peace, salam, shalom.
We believe
salam,
peace,
shalom.
We believe
salam, peace, shalom.
We believe
salam, peace, shalom.
We believe
salam, peace, shalom.
We believe
shalom,
peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful. And the words just so compelling, they just speak for themselves. Has being Jewish posed any particular challenges for you during this particular peace movement?
We've had completely wonderful responses. Right after September 11th, we went up on the 15th, I think we were in the 14th, whatever it was, that Saturday. And then on that Sunday, we were part of a march in support of the Arab American community in Brooklyn. And we had already been singing this song, and we wanted to know how to write Salam. And we saw a storefront of a translator business. And we went in, and we talked with them. But it took me the whole time. Right after we left, I came back in, and I said, I sort of had to, like, out myself as Jewish. I was concerned because of, you know, knowing what is happening in Israel and knowing the sort of mood of the mainstream Jewish organizations, which I don't necessarily know if that's the mood of the mainstream Jewish people. I think people want freedom and safety on both sides. And so we, you know, I outed myself as Jewish, and the man was wonderful. He and his partner, he said, "Oh, my neighbor is Jewish. They're my best friends." I mean, it was a beautiful moment. And and that's mostly been the experience. We have had some people that try to tell us that we can't sing, you know, those two words, salam and shalom, together. But that's a complete minority. Mostly people are so excited to see those words together. Mm-hmm. We have these T-shirts we've made up. They're excited to see them together. They're excited to hear them together. We've had women in full burqa come in and buy the T-shirt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's just a beautiful thing.
Mm. It's really what we're all really working for in this movement. Pat, you were raised about 10 miles from Kent State University in Ohio, and you were probably just a child when the four students protesting the Vietnam War were shot by the National Guard in 1970. Did this in any way influence or help to shape or mold your political consciousness?
It's really the foundation of my political consciousness. When that happened, my older sisters had gone to school at Kent State, so As a little girl, I stayed there, you know, at the university with them on weekends periodically, and I stayed in Prentice Hall with one of my eldest sisters. And when in 1970 the students were killed in Prentice Hall parking lot, it felt like it happened to me at my school and to my family. It took a number of years for me to know how exactly to address that in my life, how it would sort of manifest itself in my life. But it felt very personal and really was an awakening for me that pushed me well beyond my, you know, otherwise mainstream experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it pushed me into a whole new world and helped me see things that I think I never would have had access to.
It's often said that many in the peace movement are un-American and unpatriotic.
Mm-hmm. How dare they? you know, I mean, I come at this issue from two sides. My ancestors are both native North Americans on one side of my family, and then they are Europeans on the other side. And you know, the European part of my family came here because they felt that their freedom was being undermined by monarchy, in Britain. And I have an in my bones sort of understanding that this country, as it stands, was created on dissent. And I love it when people say things like, you know, go back to where you came from. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be something I would say to you. I think that dissent has always been at the core of what creates dynamic, creative, justice-loving community. And it is at the core of, it is central to what created this country and what has continued to move this country along and has moved it to evolve into the democracy that we all see and will move it further toward being the democracy that we all talk about.
The first song you ever wrote, Pat, Never Turning Back, was praised by Pete Seeger as the best song he'd heard in 50 years. Could you talk about how you wrote that song and then share some of it with us?
Really, all of these songs, you know, just like all folk music, it serves a need in the individual first. And in my case, I try to look beyond my own experience and extend the meaning of the song then to something larger than myself. And I, you know, I was really, again, writing that song for my own peace of mind. To mm-hmm. It functioned to address a lot of different issues for me at the time. You know, I was deciding to move into becoming the songwriter that I saw myself as and the artist that I saw myself as, and I was terrified, and I needed something to get me through that. And I also was becoming a political person, and I was becoming more aware of the issues in my community. I was becoming more aware of myself as a lesbian in the world, and all of those things caused me to have to sing to myself, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to keep moving forward, and I'm never going to turn back. Going to keep on moving forward. Keep on moving forward. Keep on moving forward. Never turning back. Never turning back. Gonna keep on moving proudly. Keep on moving proudly. Keep on moving proudly. Never turning back, never turning back. Gonna reach across our borders, reach across our borders, reach across our borders. Never turning back, never turning back. Gonna keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back. Never turning back.
Musicians Pat Humphreys and Sandy Opitau performing live in Peace Watch's studios. Their song, If I Give Your Name, was recently awarded the grand prize for folk music in the prestigious John Lennon Songwriting Contest. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producer, Sam Husseini. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening. Thank you.